Christmas in Ukraine marks another break from Russia's influence. Plus, Ukrainian Americans open their hands and hearts to help new refugees.
Many of them came with one suitcase or one backpack, so we're trying to accommodate them and help them as much as we can. So this is a hands-on event.
And later in the program, concerns in Moldova about a new front opening up in southern Ukraine. Today is Monday, December 26th, 2022. From the Voice of America in Washington, this is Flashpoint Ukraine. Good evening. I'm Steve Reddish, in for Steve Karish. Christmas came early for many Ukrainians. Russia's invasion and bombing of Ukraine have many rejecting all things Russian, and that includes when Christmas is to be celebrated. The Russian and Ukrainian Orthodox churches use the Julian calendar to celebrate Christmas on January 7th. But the Orthodox Church of Ukraine, which split from the Ukrainian Orthodox Church in 2018, gave permission for Christmas to be celebrated on December 25th, another break from Russia's sphere of influence. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky congratulated those Ukrainians who broke with tradition to celebrate Christmas this past Sunday, warning Ukrainians that Russia will, in his words, try to make this time dark and difficult, and urging his people to be, quote, ready for any scenario. In his annual Christmas message from the Vatican, Pope Francis called for peace in Ukraine, asking God to, quote, inspire us to offer concrete gestures of solidarity to assist all those who are suffering. He acknowledged Russia's war in Ukraine has put many people at risk of famine around the world.
Ja, in diesem Jahr ist wohl unser sehnlichster Wunsch, dass wieder Friede herrscht.
German President Frank-Walter Steinmeier called for, quote, a just peace that neither rewards land theft nor abandons the people of Ukraine to randomness and violence of their occupiers. Anna Chernikova has been covering the war for us all year long. I spoke to her from Kyiv via Skype a short time ago about the change in celebrating Christmas in Ukraine.
Steve, it was really a very different Christmas this year and very special Christmas, not only because of the war and because a lot of people had to spend this Christmas either away from home or at the front line, but also because a lot of Ukrainians, actually millions of Ukrainians, celebrated it earlier than usual. And this year, Ukrainian church has finally announced that the calendar transition would start, the church calendar transition. So this year was the first year when Ukrainian church actually celebrated Christmas on the 25th of December together with the rest of Europe. I personally and my family, we celebrated this Christmas this weekend. It was really, you know, you cannot really feel a lot of, you know, Christmas mood in Ukraine because still everyone is overwhelmed with the war and everything. But people try, you know, to create this Christmas mood as much as they can at their homes and also, you know, around in the restaurants, in the cafes, in the church as well. You have this, you know, little Christmas mood. So I should say that it was really special and it was really nice to finally, you know, have it together with the rest of the world. And I should say that this question has been raised in Ukraine since a couple of years now, and Ukrainians actually want this change in the church calendar. Everyone understands that it will take some time, but at least the first step has been already made. And as I already said, this year church had the special church service for those who wanted to celebrate on the 25th of December, and there were literally millions of people, and a lot of soldiers at the front line also celebrated Christmas this weekend.
It sounds like there's a definite, this is a turning point, a real breaking point with Russia, with the Russian culture, with Russian Orthodox Church.
Well, it looks like it is a turning point because I should say that a lot of people, you know, so as I already said, this negotiations about changing of the church calendar was within the Ukrainian society for a couple of years now. But when the full scale invasion started, a lot of people, even those who didn't really care much about the date of Christmas celebration or any other, you know, church celebration, but when the war, full-scale invasion started, they actually decided that they want to be, you know, want to cut all the ties with, possible ties with Russia and Russian culture and Russian church especially. And also Russian church, well, has not the best time now in Ukraine because finally Ukrainian society, I think, at least it looks like, made their decision, and a lot of people want Russian church to be out from Ukraine, and we hear about a lot of raids by security service of Ukraine because there were a lot of precedents when Russian church representatives were involved in certain contribution to Russian forces during this full-scale invasion. So there are a lot of raids in the Russian church in Ukraine. So I think that definitely it is a turning point because even those, you know, I should say that young generation in Ukraine, some of them don't really care about the date of Christmas. Some want to be the same as Europe. But, you know, a lot of people definitely don't want to be on the same, you know, cultural line time with Russia, and this definitely made this push for Ukrainian church first of all, and the head of the Ukrainian church announced that starting from the 24th of December this year, the working group has started to the working group within Ukrainian church was created in order to start this calendar transition. And he said that it will take some time because Ukrainian church wants to make sure that everything goes smooth and that everyone, absolutely everyone, are fine and okay with this. So basically, the transition has begun. We'll see how long will it take, but definitely Ukrainians and millions of Ukrainians will continue to celebrate on the 25th of December from this year on, and church definitely supports this as well. This Christmas weekend was, as I already said, was very, you know, different in for Ukraine, but also it was very tragic for the city of Kherson. On the 24th of December, Russian forces attacked the center of Kherson. And for the moment, we have confirmation about 68 people wounded and 10 people dead as a result of this attack. On the 25th of December, so yesterday, thousands of Kherson citizens came to the hospital, to the blood center in Kherson, to actually give blood to those who were wounded in this attack. We know that this attack happened just, you know, in the middle of the day, and it was really a very serious. So the consequences are really serious. There are damages of the city center, of the city, different city districts, and also of the medical institutions inside the city of Kherson. The head of the military head of Kherson at this time confirmed this and said that people are encouraged to evacuate if they have this possibility, because currently the situation in Kherson is very dangerous for the civilians because Russian forces are located just on the other side of the river, and artillery attacks are happening all the time. They are just don't stop. They are nonstop. And especially he encouraged those who live next to this river of Dnipro to evacuate, because the government, Ukrainian government, have this possibility, created this possibility for people to evacuate to safer places. And also, I should mention, of course, the city of Bakhmut, because this is in the Donetsk region, and this is one of the hottest spots at the front line for the moment, and it remains for a couple of weeks, even months now. As we have confirmation from Ukrainian officials, heavy fightings continue there. Ukrainian forces managed to keep their positions. Russian forces do not proceed further. And this is, of course, an important for Ukrainian forces, let's put it this way, a great result for these past weeks and months. And also we have confirmation from the Ukrainian general staff that actually Ukrainian forces over the weekend managed to hit 9 control points of the Russian forces and 7 concentration areas of the Russian forces. However, the general staff did not specify exact locations where this happened.
That was Anna Chernikova reporting for VOA from Kyiv. Russia claims to have shot down a Ukrainian drone that flew very close to Russia's Engels Air Base, nearly 600 kilometers inside Russia from Ukraine's border. The AP's Karen Chamas has details.
Russia confirmed several servicemen were killed from the debris at its Engels Air Base. The incident is the second time the air base has been targeted in a short space of time. It raises questions about Russia's air defenses, if drones can fly that far into the country. The Engels Air Base is in Russia's Saratov region, which lies over 370 miles east of the border with Ukraine. I'm Karen Chamas.
Skirmishes to try and keep Russian missiles at bay are common in the skies over Ukraine, and their outcomes have a direct bearing on the lives of millions of people who are left without heat, power, or running water during the freezing winter if defenses fail. More from Reuters correspondent Ed Barron.
As Russian cruise missiles sped towards their target this month, a Ukrainian pilot gave chase and locked onto 2 of them, but couldn't take the shot due to being too near a town. The targets were passed on to Ukraine's ground-based air defenses, which shot them down, like hundreds of missiles since October, blunting the impact of a Russian air campaign that aims to destroy the country's power grid. Air defense units are deployed where they're needed most, and fighter pilots cover the gaps. A tall order in the decades-old MiG-29, flown by Ukrainian pilot codenamed Juice.
Actually, our 40-year-old radars were not even designed to be used to engage such types of aerial threats.
Russia has launched 9 large-scale air attacks, usually firing more than 70 missiles at a time, since October 10th. Ukraine's record of downing missiles has ranged from around 50% to as much as 85%, according to Reuters calculations based on Ukrainian data. Still, those which come through inflict serious damage. The outcomes of such skirmishes have a direct bearing on the lives of millions of people who are left without heat, power, or running water during the freezing winter if defenses fail. Ukraine calls the attacks a war crime. Russia says the electricity grid is a legitimate military target in its special operation. It's Ukraine's ground-based air defense units that shoot down the vast majority of missiles and drones, not aging warplanes. That's according to Ukraine Air Force spokesman Yuri Inat.
Both missiles and drones fly along the course of rivers to be as low as possible and disappear from radars. If they're low enough, they just disappear. We don't see it for some time. Then they pop up again. It's a game of cat and mouse.
Ukraine's military intelligence chief has estimated that Russia may only have enough high-precision weapons for a few more major airstrikes. But Ukrainian officials also acknowledge that their own stocks of defensive weapons are dwindling as the invasion nears the 10-month mark. On Wednesday, the United States announced $1.85 billion in additional military assistance for Ukraine, including a transfer of the Patriot air defense system.
That was Ed Barron reporting for Reuters.
That is Russian President Vladimir Putin in an interview broadcast Sunday on Russian state television, saying his country is ready to, in his words, negotiate some acceptable outcomes with Ukraine. Putin maintained that it is not Russia that refuses talks. He says it is Ukraine that will not come to the table. A Ukrainian official pointed the finger back at Putin, saying, quote, Russia does not want negotiations but tries to avoid responsibility. Just a few days ago, Putin used the word war for the first time publicly to describe the situation, which he had previously labeled a special military operation. You're listening to VOA's Flashpoint Ukraine. I'm Steve Reddish. Moldovan intelligence officials say Russian forces could launch a military offensive early next year in southern Ukraine. One goal, they say, might be to link Russian forces in Ukraine to a Russia-backed separatist region in Moldova. More from our Anna Kostushenko, who recently visited the region.
Nina was born and raised here, in the Ukrainian village of Velika Mikhailovka in Odessa Oblast, which borders Transnistria, a Russian-backed separatist region of Moldova. For most of her life, she worked at a local factory. Today, she owns a small bread stand. Nina isn't worried about a Moldovan intelligence report warning that Russia might launch a new offensive in southern Ukraine.
It's just talk. We're fine here. Everything is calm. Our guys are protecting us.
But not all locals are unconcerned as Nina.
We are very close to the border. We are constantly on the edge, trying to support our soldiers in any way we can.
We are approaching the Transnistria border. The houses you see over there, they are already in Transnistria.
Alexander Kovalchuk was born and raised in this part of Ukraine.
My parents live some 25 kilometers away from the border of Moldova.
Moldova declared its independence from the Soviet Union in 1991. In 1992, Russian-backed separatists started a civil war in Transnistria and still control the region, even though it is internationally recognized as part of Moldova. There are Russian troops in the region to this day, and that's what worries many Ukrainians living near the border. Kovalchuk says since the start of the war in Ukraine, large numbers of men have crossed the Ukrainian-Moldovan border near Tiraspol, Transnistria's capital.
We have unofficial information that in the last 6 months, a lot of young and middle-aged men have come to Transnistria. They said they were visiting relatives or had business to do, yet none of them left. We assume these are Russian officers and they are waiting for something. According to our sources, it's about 1,000 men as of now.
Moldovan intelligence officials heightened concerns this week when they said there could be a Russian offensive in southern Ukraine early next year, with the goal of linking Ukraine and Transnistria. Kovalchuk believes it's unlikely.
Even if there's a conflict, Ukraine will win. We have more men there. We have an advantage.
Meanwhile, residents of Velika Mikhailovka are preparing for winter. Volunteers have set up heating point for locals because Russian rocket attacks have been knocking out electricity and heating across the country.
We realize this winter will be tough. Our state is all we have, and we'll fight for it until the end. We are owners of our land.
The village continues to live its life, but cautiously, keeping an eye on the western border. For Anna Kostuchenko in the Odessa region, Ukraine, Anna Rice, VOA News.
In New York City, there's a neighborhood on the east side of Manhattan known as Little Ukraine. Residents there have been doing what they can
to help Ukrainian refugees who have made it to the United States. Yevgeny Maslov has the story from New York City.
Here are some beans, semolina, soups. Take however much you need.
Groceries, warm clothes, and hygiene kits. The nonprofit human rights organization called Razem, which means together in Ukrainian, wants to help care for Ukrainians who have recently arrived in New York City.
We are hosting this event to support displaced Ukrainians who are here in New York City because of the war, and many of them came with one suitcase or one backpack, so we're trying to accommodate them and help them as much as we can. So this is hands-on event.
Denise and Olga moved to New York from Ivano-Frankivsk in October. They came here to grab some warm clothes for the whole family as the city braces for winter months.
People help so much and it's very sweet. Everyone treats us warmly. We didn't expect people to show so much support. We are very grateful.
It's a little tough, but we're managing, acclimating. We'll live here for now, but once the war is over, we'll return home.
Razem also organizes lingual help for recent arrivals. There are also free English courses at the New York Public Library.
Well, usually everybody needs different stuff, but today mostly is hygiene and products before Christmas, like food products, because, you know, it's the holiday season and they want to have stuff in their home. So that's what I feel like they're more likely. And coats, obviously, because it's very cold out now.
It's a charity drive on two fronts. Since the start of the war, Razem has been sending humanitarian aid to Ukraine. But the challenge now, as more and more refugees come to the U.S., is finding ways to help them as well.
We were fortunate enough to be one of the organizations that received a grant from the city of New York to help recently arrived displaced Ukrainians. And this donation drive and donation distribution event is just one of the ways that we do community outreach and welcome the newly arrived Ukrainians and offer them different services and also humanitarian aid.
For many fleeing the war, New York is just the first stop. The search for work could take them all over the U.S. But for now, New York is home, and the charity groups here are hoping to make the holiday season a bright spot for refugees who have lived through a difficult year. For Yevgeny Maslov in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
And that will do it for us today. Stay up to date with continuing coverage on Ukraine and news from around the world 24 hours a day at voanews.com. And on social media, just follow VOA News. On behalf of the entire Flashpoint Ukraine team, thanks for listening. Until next time, I'm Steve Reddish.
Washington, D.C.